Wake up, America!
Wake up, America. It's time for Michael Dean After Dark. I'm your host, Michael Dean, Freedom Fiend, and this is the Late Night Feisty Liberty Show. We have a rotating stable of interesting insomniac co-hosts. Plus, we leave the phone lines open. So if the hamster in your brain is keeping you up, please call in.
That's right. Boys and girls, ladies and gentlemen, kitty cats and puppy dogs, hold your kitties tight, pet them sweetly. It's a cold night here in Wyoming. Yes, this is Michael Dean, and this is Michael Dean After Dark, and I am keeping the wheels turning on the hamster in your brain and keeping the machinery working on the coffee industrial complex, doing six shows a week, two in the afternoon, morning, afternoon, on weekends, and four in the evenings, starting on the same day. This is the second show I've done today. And my co-host tonight is Mr. Randy England. Are you there, Randy?
I am here on this beautiful Sunday night.
Yeah.
Sunday morning.
Yeah. Randy's happy. He's healthy. He's got a glass of wine in his hand. It's not Eucharist wine, but he did write a book called, well, is it Eucharist wine? I don't think it is.
That's all right.
Okay. It's not, yeah. You wrote a book called Free is Beautiful, Why Catholics Should Be Libertarian. Where can people find that book?
Oh, well, the book is, you can look at, find it on Amazon or at smashwords.com. But if you want to just go to my website, freeisbeautiful.net, www.freeisbeautiful.net. You can listen to a free copy of the e-book. Audiobook, I should say. The whole thing is there. That part's for free. You don't have to pay for the paperback. And in fact, the e-edition, if anybody wants to get on there and email me, I'll send them a free coupon for a free e-book in any format they want.
Yeah, that sounds good. So
I'd love to.
I'm interested in this idea of why Catholics should be libertarian. And I'm interested, I've always wondered why a lot of religious people are so statist, and I don't think they should be. A couple things I've heard that make a lot of sense is Jesus was put to death by the government after a fair trial by soldiers and police who were just following orders. And if you truly love God, I don't think you can put the state before that. What do you think?
Well, you know, I mean, to say both Catholics or both Christians are statist, I mean, it's not that big an indictment. After all, most people are statist.
Oh, absolutely.
But still, you know, you see things like, one of the most common, you know, scriptural passages is from a letter of Paul to the Romans, you know, where he writes, let everybody be subject to the governing authorities, and if you owe taxes, pay taxes, and if revenue is due, pay revenue, and pay respect to whom respect is due. And that's very often interpreted as being, you know, do whatever the state says. You know, it says pay your taxes. Now, I don't necessarily believe that it does mean that, but there are some scripture passages that people take thinking that it authorizes, you know, the government pushing people around or paying taxes, like when Jesus said, render unto Caesar. You know, when they asked him about paying the poll tax, and he said, render to Caesar what is Caesar's and to God what is God's. And, you know, that really was an anti-tax statement, but the Romans were kind of too dumb to understand it. A little while later, they figured it out when the guys that wanted to crucify Jesus explained it to them, and then, oh, okay, we get it.
Explain it to me. Yeah, how is that an anti-tax statement?
Well, they came to him and said, is it lawful to pay the tax? And this was the religious leaders, the Jewish leaders in Israel, said, is it lawful to pay the tax? And Jesus said, well, show me the coin they used to pay the tax. And it's a denarius, which has a Caesar's picture on the front of it, the picture of Tiberius Caesar was the emperor at the time. And he took it and looked at it and said, well, I say, render under Caesar the things that are Caesar's and to God the things that are God's. And, you know, there's a lot of layers to the message. But, of course, the Romans were happy enough to say, well, if he said render to Caesar what's Caesar's and here's Caesar's picture on the coin, then you know, that
we'll take it. They said, we'll take it.
But the reason that the leaders asked Jesus the statement is that they knew that all the people hated the Romans, and everybody was against paying taxes to Caesar. If they could get Jesus to say, yeah, you should pay the tax, I mean, that would kind of ruin his following that he had built up at this time. And everybody knew what Jesus was saying at the time, and the Romans were satisfied and left him alone. It was only a short time later, probably a week or two, when he was arrested, taken before Pontius Pilate, and Pilate said, well, what has this guy done wrong? And they said, well, he's, you know, perverting the teachings of Moses, and here's the biggie, he says that you don't have to pay the tax. Because, see, they knew what Jesus was saying, and they explained it to the Romans, and they crucified him. But those same statements are used today by Christians, Catholic Christians as well, in authorizing people to pay their taxes and obey things. But, you know, there are lots and lots of places on the internet, you know, where Christian libertarians, you know, have websites and explain, you know, really well, I think, you know, why you shouldn't jump to conclusions about the scripture passages that the statists like to interpret in favor of the state when there are other ways to interpret them. But and they talk about that, but I sometimes like to go even further back and say, well, let's just leave, you know, Jesus and St. Paul, you know, for that. And there's a lot of that out there. But I think that God himself is far more libertarian than we are. I mean, because, you know, in the beginning, I mean, man was created with free will, and you had the story in the Garden of Eden with Adam and Eve, and which is kind of in the news lately because of that movie Noah that's out. I just saw that. It's pretty interesting. But anyway, back to Adam and Eve, you know, they had one rule when they were in the garden, you know, don't eat the fruit of that one tree, you know, and they were free to obey that or disobey. And God warned them, you know, if you ate the fruit of the tree, it would kill them. It would bring death into the world. But he made them free, and he could not prevent their abuse of that freedom. And of course, death and all the troubles came into the world. And that's the, you know, in the creation story. And so
some people think that the fruit was symbolic of them having sex, but it was probably more likely of them wanting what was it? It was the tree of knowledge. What does that mean to you?
Well, you know, the serpent told them, God doesn't want you to eat from that because he knows that when you eat of the fruit of the tree, your eyes will be opened and you'll be like God, and having knowledge and knowing everything. But and of course, the thing about it being sex, I don't know who ever thought that up. That I think that's pretty goofy, but
yeah, because obviously, if God wanted peoples on the world, he wanted them to procreate.
Yeah, apparently it was a test of some kind to see if they would follow God's will or they would go off on their own will. And God was not in no way was going to interfere with it. I mean, God made the whole universe, and I'm talking here from a Christian standpoint. I know that there's plenty of people that have reasons why, you know, they don't believe that, and I mean, I'm respectful of those views. But just from this viewpoint, you have God could have made robots so that he made everybody who would do exactly the things that he wanted them to do and live exactly as they should and change their oil every, you know, 5,000 miles, or, you know, whatever the manual, you know, for human life is. Didn't you write one of those too? Okay. Michael, didn't you write some human handbook, I think?
Yeah, it's called User's Manual for the Human Experience. And one of the most common critiques of people who don't read the book and just judge a book by its title are people saying, this book already, there already is a User's Manual for the Human Experience. It's called the Bible.
You know, actually, I did read part of that book, but being kind of an old dog and maybe not being able to change a lot of my tricks, the part that I remembered was, I think, like the last chapter where you talked. It was the letter from
it's called letter
old Michael.
Yeah, it was like Michael. The letter I would write now to me at 18.
Yeah,
and letter to a young me.
That was really good. That was really good. Thanks. Well, anyway, the you know, he could have made robots, but he said, "Look, I want people that would like to come here and live with me and hang out with me, and I can't have robots. It has to be free choice. You know, you have free will." So you know, we listen to this story, you know, about Adam and Eve and how God wanted them to do something and they didn't do it, and you go, "Well, wait a minute. God's all powerful. He can do anything. How can he let this bad thing happen when he has the power to prevent it?" And from a human point of view, you know, it's really peculiar when you think about it. I mean, when we want to prevent something that's bad, you know, from happening, I mean, we just stop it. We take whatever steps are necessary, and we stop it from happening. If it's in our power to stop something we don't want to happen, we stop it. But if we can't stop it, well, when we get together and maybe make a government, get with a bunch of other people, declare it to be a crime, and then we punish it afterwards. So we're going to do something to stop things from happening. So God's reaction to evil is so weird, so different. I mean, unlike man, God has this absolute power to stop any evil from happening, could have stopped it at any stage that he wants, and he could have never made men in the first place. And he could have made us like robots so that we never did anything wrong, but he didn't do that. He made men and women, you know, in his own image with freedom to choose good and evil and, you know, gave them the earth. And then he said it was good. You know, it was good, even though I knew bad stuff was going to happen. And so apparently free will is really, really important. So important that it's given to every single person, not just the first, you know, the first Adam and Eve. And even though it obviously brought, you know, death and sorrow to, you know, every generation since that time, it seemed that was the only way to make, the kind of people that could enjoy, I don't know, but only free men can become good men. I mean, real virtue absolutely requires liberty, and that's the reason why Christians must be libertarian.
Excellent. We'll be back with more on Michael Dean After Dark. And you can call in at 1-855-660-4261 or Skype to KittyFeet1.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Michael Dean After Dark.
Howdy, I'm Ben Stone from the Bad Quaker Podcast. I'll show you the difference between leadership and authority and how to eliminate the demand for authority while remaining peaceful and even calm. We have a forum and it's got gardening tips. Check out the Bad Quaker Podcast at badquaker.com. That's BADQUAKER.com.
Good evening, Freedom Fiends. This is Michael Dean After Dark, also known as MDAD, M-D-A-D, and that's not a new designer drug, that is Michael Dean After Dark, which is a legal non-chemical designer drug that affects your brain and indoctrinates you into the ways of non-indoctrination. And Nima actually called it MDAD. He says, "Dad, but Dad." That's, MDAD. And it also sounds like, I don't know, it sounds like an acronym that some government agency would use for some super duper spy agency that spies on the other spy agencies. MDAD.
It sounds like a poison that they would feed us.
And we have a caller. We have Nikki Hayes calling in on the Skypes using the microphone that we sent him. He won without entering a contest. We had like four of these left over, and we had a contest and gave one away, and then we just gave three away to like cool callers who sounded who had good thoughts and good things to say, but sounded really horrible over the phone. So how you doing there, Nick?
I'm doing great.
You sound a lot better.
Yeah, I know. I really appreciate it. I've been using it. I've been messing around with editing audio for a couple days now, and I'm really excited.
Excellent. So what's on your mind tonight?
I want to talk about pledging allegiance and how that's splitting your loyalty to God and the government.
I'll tell you a quick story about Pledge of Allegiance. When I was seventh grade. About, are you in seventh grade?
No, I'm ninth grade.
Ninth grade. Okay. When I was in seventh grade, I don't remember. I'm 50. When I was in seventh grade, I decided I didn't want to say the Pledge of Allegiance anymore in school. And I had no political agenda. I was just like, these people sound like robots. I'm not a robot. I don't want to do this. I have free will. And I stopped saying the Pledge of Allegiance. And I think I'd read somewhere that, like, there's no legal requirement to do it. And I think there'd been a Supreme Court decision or something. And so I just stood there, and the teacher called the principal and called my parents. And so what they finally decided was that I could just go out in the hall when they said the head Pledge of Allegiance, like, we don't want you in here contaminating other people. So I went out in the hall, and then the Canadian girl, the girl just moved there from Canada, who was real cute, had to go out in the hall too, because she wouldn't say it either because she was Canadian. And so I got to hang out with the cool pretty girl from another country for not saying the Pledge of Allegiance. And then the football team threatened to beat me up. So I went back in and after a few days and just kind of went through the motions of saying the Pledge of Allegiance. But what are your thoughts on it?
Well, so I used to be a Christian, and I used to say the Pledge of Allegiance, but I realized about, you know, seventh grade that it was splitting my loyalty between the government and God. Because when you pledge allegiance, you're pledging your loyalty, and what pledging means is you're giving your loyalty no matter what.
Yeah.
There's no question about that. And what happens is, you know, the government does something that your God and your religion would disapprove of, and then you have to decide who you're going to be loyal to, but you already pledged, right? So you're going to have to break your word. And I mean, why pledge if you're just going to break your word?
Yeah. Did you know that the Pledge of Allegiance was invented by a Christian socialist? It was written by Francis Bellamy in 1892, and he also was in the business of selling flags. He basically wrote it to get people to buy, to get schools to buy flags. It was a jobs program. It was fascism. It was basically, you know, fascism is when economic activities are mandated by the state, and buying flags for every school in the nation and renewing them when they out of state and when they wear out is literally fascism. And the salute, they used to originally not put their hand on heart. They did a salute very much like the Nazi salute, and the Nazis got that from America, and then Americans stopped doing that because they didn't want to be associated with Nazis, rightfully so, and did the hand on heart thing. That's a little bit of history about the Pledge of Allegiance.
Nick, I sure appreciate what you're saying there. I went to talk with Tom Woods speaking one time, and he got up and he started to give his talk, and then a lady jumped up in the back of the room. It was more of kind of a Tea Party group rather than libertarian. She says, "Oh, we must start with the Pledge of Allegiance." And, you know, it was like somebody jumping up and well, anyway. And he said, "Well, would you like to lead it?" and she did, and they went, and he stood there respectfully. But then he explained to the audience that if you must say the pledge, you should go silent for the words "one nation, indivisible." And he was well received with it.
Yeah, but if you're going to alter it and not do what other people are doing, you might as well go stand in the hall and pray. That's what I would do. We'll be back with more. Stick around, Nick.
You're listening to Michael Dean After Dark. This is what radio sounds like now.
Want to contribute to liberty but short on cash? You can help the Freedom Fiends without even spending a post-1964 dime. Download uTorrent and start seeding Fiends episodes and DVDs to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. There you'll find our Torrent RSS feed and instructions to grab past episodes and automatically download new ones, even while you're away from the computer. You'll also get special episodes of The Fiends days or even weeks before regular podcast subscribers who aren't torrenting. Leave your computer on, seeding the torrents while you're at work or asleep. The more people seeding The Fiends, the more drone-proof we'll be when the boot comes down.
Yeah. Michael Dean. Michael Dean After Dark, the champion of the little man and the little woman, and I am simultaneously the champion of the little man and the little woman, and also the voice behind the coffee industrial complex. I consume a lot of coffee, and I think I get a lot of other people to consume coffee by doing this show and having people up after dark who otherwise should be in bed listening and calling in and doing the co-hosting like Randy. Randy, is it past your bedtime? Hello, Randy?
Oh. Yeah. You're talking to me.
I'm talking to you.
No, it's not. I'm a bit of a night owl.
You don't have court in the morning?
I only get up early when I have court. and I don't do this show when I have court the next morning.
Yeah, and to be clear, he's not arrested a lot. He's a lawyer. That's why he's in court a lot. So, Nick, I was curious about if other kids in your school, do you go to public school?
Yeah, I go to a charter school.
Oh, is that the better public school?
Yeah.
For the smart kids?
Yeah.
Cool. Do they also have a lottery to get some not smart kids in there so everyone can be equal?
Yeah, they have a lottery for the kindergarten. So it's K through 12, like 200 kids.
So do you do AP classes, advanced placement?
Yeah.
Cool. What kind of grades do you get?
I have a 4.0.
Wow.
I've got one B this semester, but otherwise
I had really bad grades. I was on the School Sucks podcast the other day. That'll be coming out in a little while. And I don't usually say that second word on the radio, but it's the name of the show, so I'm going to say it. And it's not – he doesn't hate education. He just hates public school and actually used to be a teacher. He's very into education and very into knowledge, but agrees – he's a libertarian guy who believes that – making people sit in the same rows at the same time, at the same place for years and years and years and memorizing things is not the best way to get an education. It's a good way to learn to work in a factory or be a soldier, but the world's not running that way anymore, and even the soldiers are going to be replaced by robots. So what are the kids in your – do the kids in your school know about your beliefs as a libertarian?
Yeah, I'm very popular because of it.
Are you being sarcastic?
Yeah. People really like me, but I get made fun of a lot.
What do they say?
Oh, you know, the classic, what about the roads?
You're stupid. You don't like violence and aggression and coercion. No, they don't say that, right?
No, they say the opposite. They think that I promote aggression and violence.
Oh, so they think that without their blessed mother and father state, which is how people who defend the state look at it, that we'd all be sitting in ditches, pushing berries up our nose while roving mafioso bands terrorize grandmother with automatic weapons.
That's right.
Yeah. What do you say? Can you use logic on any of them?
Yeah. So what I try to do is I talk about, you know, I emphasize the non-aggression principle, saying I believe that the initiation of force is wrong. And if you agree with me, you cannot believe in government because of this and this and that. And they usually get that and say, okay, yeah, sure. But we still need it. And then I have to get into depth. And by that time, I usually lose their attention.
The thing that I've discovered is that there's two kinds of people. I mean, I'm not dividing the world up into there's two kinds of people, but there are two kinds of people, those who believe in initiating aggression and force by proxy or directly, and those who don't. And we are those who don't. And there are two kinds of people when it comes to discussing these ideas with them. And they are the kind of people that, you know, when people are first presented with it, they don't usually just get it immediately. I ran into Libertarian Party people in college, and I was like, this sounds like a religion. Leave me alone. I mean, because they were really pushy, and they were like, you know, a lot of newly minted libertarians are wide-eyed and think everybody needs to listen to their spiel, and they were Libertarian Party people, so their spiel wasn't very well-formed. It was trying to do it within the confines of the aggression of the state, which does not make sense. But there's two kinds of people I've encountered with this. There's people who are probably libertarian in their heart of hearts, but haven't had it explained well yet. And those people, they'll say who would build the roads, but then you explain how that could happen without a coercive government. And they go, maybe. And then they'll ask another question. But the people that will never get it are the ones who defend the state like they're defending their parents, like they're defending their family, and they're mean and aggressive with their answers. And those people, I just walk away from. I just I don't waste my time with them. Some people I do. Some people I know do. Some people will spend the time in person or on Facebook or on the interweb somewhere trying to argue with these people. And it's like trying to – I've heard it said that it's like trying to play chess with a pigeon. You know, if you play chess with a pigeon, the pigeon will knock over all the pieces, crap on the board, and then strut around like he won anyway. And that's what those people will do. They can't deal with logic, and they will just resort to logical fallacies. Have you studied logical fallacies to recognize them?
Yeah, I have. I have a verbal communications class I've been taking, and we've done that.
Wow, in school. Yeah, they don't generally, they don't teach that in regular public high school anymore, and they don't generally have debate classes in regular public high school anymore, because regular public high school doesn't want to teach you to think for yourself. They want to teach you, you know, I mean, the purpose of the school that you're at is probably to train people to work for the state in a supervisorial capacity, not in the grunt capacity. The regular schools teach people for the grunt capacity. So what are you going to do when you get out of high school? Do you have plans yet?
Right now, I've started yak farming.
What's yak farming? Does that mean you I know what you're saying. You raise the animals of yaks, right?
Yes.
Yeah, that's a pretty – you're the first person I've ever talked to who does that. I used to live in a place in rural – Southern California, where there were a lot of hobby llama farms, but never yak farming. I could say I'm a yak farmer too, because I yak on the radio all day, and I try to get people to buy good microphones so they'll sound better yakking on the radio. I'm a yak farmer too.
Do yaks have a nice coat?
They do.
Like you, llamas?
Do you milk them?
You can. I plan on doing that.
Do you have yaks?
Yes, I have four.
You have four. Are they your family's or you personally have four?
They're mine. I just took out a loan from my parents.
Wow. Wow. Are your parents farmers? What do they do?
Well, my dad is actually the director of the charter school I go to. And principal's son, yay.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's like being the preacher's son. Like you get punished more because they don't want to look like they're giving you leniency. That's exactly. Been my experience, but I don't know if that's yours. Wow.
Yeah, it is. And then my mom works for the Department of Forestry.
Wow. I mean, do you name your yaks or are they just farm animals?
I just got them this month last month. So I have not taken the time to name them.
That is about the coolest thing I've ever heard someone call and say they do is yak farmer. That's awesome.
That's one of the reasons I really want to get into it. It's because when you say I'm a yak farmer, like, people think, what?
You know why I got into cats? You know, I'm all big on cats and everything's cats. And, you know, my Skype name is Kitty Feet. And my wife and I have three cats and I hang out with the cats constantly. I did that before I had cats, and some girl that I knew in San Francisco was like, are you just a poser or are you really into cats? And I was like, well, and I wasn't trying to impress this girl. It wasn't a girlfriend or a potential girlfriend. It was a friend of mine's girlfriend. And I was like, that's a good question. So I went down to the SPCA and volunteered as a cat socializer, which is someone who, when they have little baby kittens that don't have a mother and they want to adopt them out, they have to have someone take them and like pet them all the time to get them used to people, or they won't, or they'll be standoffish and spit at people and won't be able to get adopted and they'll have to put them down. So I would get one or two or three little baby kittens, like, you know, less than a pound. And I'd have them for about 2 months and then take them back and get more kittens. And it was pretty awesome. It was volunteer work and I love doing it. And it got me into cats. And now I just love cats and surround myself with them constantly. Yaks, man. Well, thanks for calling in and yakking with us, and we're looking forward to hearing from you more. Thanks for your call, Nick.
Yeah,
hey,
thank
Nick.
You.
Good night.
Worms.
Take care, worms. All right. So, Randy.
Yeah.
Randy. Yeah.
Libertarian yak farmer. I love it.
I love it, too. Yep. Are yaks in the Bible? There's a lot of animals in the Bible.
Oh, they must be.
See, we don't have a board. We have a board op, but he's in Minnesota. Are you there, Randy?
Hey, I'm back.
Hey, you're back. Yeah, I got to learn how to hang up one caller without hanging up the other caller. I haven't quite mastered that yet. But, you know, this is the teaching hospital, and that even applies to the host. So what did you think of yak farming, man? That was a pretty bright kid, man. I like him.
Yeah, yeah. Of course, you know, he I mean, he's a libertarian yak farmer, and his father's the principal. Yep. That's an uphill fight there.
Well, I don't know. There's worse thing, far worse things your parents could be. Chief of police. I think I'd rather have my dad be the principal of my school than be the chief of police in my town. I knew a kid like that when I was growing up.
Well, maybe both of those are a little bit like being the preacher's kid.
Yeah, and preacher's kids have a what's the what do they say about preacher's kids?
I'm not sure.
Well, there was a song in the 70s. I was born son of a preacher man. Yeah, I don't remember
it. Oh, yes. Yeah, okay. I remember that one, too.
Yeah.
I don't remember the rest of the words.
Yeah, so we're talking about the Bible and Christian libertarianism. What is your book about exactly?
Oh, my book. Well, my book is called It's Free is Beautiful, which is subtitled Why Catholics Should Be Libertarian, and I would expand that to say why any Christian should be libertarian. Then I would expand that to say that anybody should be libertarian.
Yeah.
But when I started becoming, you know, more and more libertarian, I guess I've been partway there all my life, and it just took some time to get to the end. But you know, I started seeing when I was a prosecutor that these victimless crimes and that are really a problem. You go back, you know, like to say St. Thomas Aquinas. And he says things like the only things that should be crimes are things that like hurt other people,
yeah,
like murder and assault and stealing and that sort of thing. And you know, I started thinking that libertarianism was really very, very a biblical and a very Christian philosophy, and it fit together really well. I mean, you got the golden rule, right? Don't do to somebody else what you don't want done to yourself.
Yeah, and all governments break that rule all day, every day, because they think that they can judge when even Jesus could not judge. We'll be back with more on the Freedom Fiends. I mean, Michael Dean After Dark.
This radio show is called Michael Dean After Dark. Go to michaelwdean.com to help keep it drone-proof.
MeowBit is free software from the Freedom Fiends that allows you to effortlessly view .bit websites. MeowBit works on all browsers. .bit is a new type of web address that's not controlled by any government or corporation. And we'll show you how to register a .bit domain today using a few cents worth of Namecoin. If anyone ever shuts down your .com website, users will still be able to get to your site using your .bit address and our free software, MeowBit. Go to meowbit.com. That's MeowBit.com. This is Mr. Michael Dean. Michael Dean After Dark, also known as M-Dad, or as Nima calls it, M-Dad. And we are yakking away the night. I'm a yak farmer. I like to yak, and I like to get other people to yak. I guess that makes me a yak farmer, but not the same kind that actually raises the animals called yak. A little known fact. The Freedom Fiends, before we had that name, which Nima came up with, I wanted to call the show Freedom Yak, like yak being a double entendre for the animal and for yakking about stuff. And I wanted to have, I had a friend of mine working on a logo. It was going to be a big burly yak who looked very free and happy and proud. And we never got around to it because Nima really didn't like the name Freedom Yak. So it became.
Did you consider Freedom Cats?
Freedom Cats. I think there's actually no, we didn't. And I think there's actually a libertarian podcast now called Liberty Cats, and it's two guys. You know, cats. The double entendre on that. So we got a caller here. We got Jose calling from Orange County, California, very close to where I escaped from, Los Angeles County, one county over. How you doing there, Jose?
I'm doing good. How about you guys?
Good, man. What's on your mind?
Like today, I was actually having a moral quandary about the pledge type of thing. I don't pledge allegiance to a flag or anything, but I was actually, because over here the gun laws are severely restrictive, California, obviously.
Yeah.
Where it's like horrible, but
yeah,
the only place where we could take...
My stepson got thrown to the ground by police in Orange County in Anaheim. He got pulled over, and they just pulled him over for driving. They didn't like the way he looked. He looks kind of punk rock, and they pulled him over, and he kind of sassed him with his mouth a little bit and wasn't real respectful to police. Like, they like you to basically fear them. And they searched his car. They didn't find anything illegal. There were no guns, no drugs, no large amounts of cash. But they did find an unopened box of Mosin Nagant ammo, like one of those big tins of 440. And they put a gun to his head and started screaming at him that he had illegal cop killer bullets. And they finally called their watch commander down, and he drove down 5 minutes away from the police station and said, "Those are antique bullets for an antique gun. They're legal. Let them go." But, yeah, man.
Oh, that's terrible.
That is.
Even worse than I would have expected.
So,
just for bullets over here.
Where do you have to say the Pledge of Allegiance?
But,
you in school?
Like, I want to go shoot it on public lands because it's the only way I could do it for free.
Yeah?
No, I'm not in school anymore. I'm in college, but not school.
Do they say the Pledge of Allegiance in college?
Not that I have seen. I've seen teachers try, and like, there are teachers who are patriotic and try and start with stuff like that, but nobody really does it.
So what's your moral quandary if you're not in a position of having to choose to say it or not? Is there a place you say it?
Well, it's because the BLM lands type of thing. I was looking at it because the only way I could figure out how to shoot on BLM lands is with state militias, because they have some land that they have out there.
Yeah.
And like, I was reading the state militia doctrine, and it said, like, I had to pledge my allegiance to the Constitution.
Yeah. I mean, that's not hand on heart. That's just signing a piece of paper. I don't know. I don't want to tell anyone to lie about anything like that. But when a coercive government is making it very hard to do what you want to do, I don't know, man. I don't know if I would sign that or not now. I just got out of California. My wife and I moved to Wyoming 4 years ago, and we go out to BLM land and shoot, and it's legal. And as long as you clean up your brass, there's no problem. There's no pledge. There's no paperwork. There's no insurance. There's no cops. There's nothing. The only thing that's ever happened in the many times I've been shooting out there was one time we were shooting a 50 cal rifle that a friend of mine had, which is illegal in California. And a BLM cop, or whatever they call him, BLM Ranger, pulled up in his little Ranger mobile and came out, and we thought he was going to hassle us or something. And he was standing around, and he said, "Can I shoot your rifle?" And we let him shoot it, and then he left. So, all right, man. Thanks for calling in, Jose. Yep. It's been good having you call in.
And all right, thank you.
Take care, man. Call in anytime. Bye-bye.
All right, you too. Bye-bye.
You're listening to Michael Dean After Dark. Go to michaelwdean.com. That's michaelwdean.com.
Good evening, my fellow
worms. I know some things.
I'll be back with more later on.
I'm never satisfied.
This is Michael Dean After Dark.
L'estato sperimentato.
I don't know
if I'm saying
it. The United States government presents
no vision.
Congrats. Not having enough money.
The power was so great.
Estos por su parte consideran
to provide guidance to mankind.
Go to michaelwdean.com for more. That's michaelwdean.com. We'll be back for hour two after this trip to the market on Michael Dean After Dark.
Bye for now.
This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends. I've been on the World Wide Web since its inception in 1994. I've tried dozens of web providers in that time. The only one that hasn't broken my heart is HostGator. HostGator has unlimited server space, unlimited throughput, and a guaranteed uptime of better than 99.9% for only $150 a year. You can pay a little less elsewhere, but you'll pull out your hair dealing with anyone else. HostGator has great service and unlimited tech support, only a phone call away, 24/7, 365. HostGator is where pros like the Fiends host, because we know how to do it right. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the HostGator affiliate link on the right sidebar to sign up today. Your kitties tight. It is Michael Dean. Michael Dean After Dark, also known as MDAD, M-D-A-D. It's the new non-chemical drug that alters your brain and indoctrinates you into anti-indoctrination. and non-coercion and non-aggression. That is what MDAT is, the new drug that's sweeping the nation. So, yeah, man, this is Michael Dean. It's After Dark. And the only constitution that we take an oath to here is the one that is written on the hearts of mankind by God. So, Randy, what's up, man? What's up? You had an answer for him. I did not have an answer for him. And here's the thing. Most radio show hosts who take callers will give advice to anybody who calls in about anything. But if I don't have advice, I think it makes you a little wiser to not give advice. And I don't have advice. But Randy has some advice for Jose. What's your advice? Not saying you're
being,
not as
being
wise.
Less wise and all.
What's your advice, man?
Well, you know, his problem he mentioned was, you know, should I sign something saying that I support the Constitution, you know, so I can be in this group or something. As you pointed out, I'm an attorney, and every year we have to renew our oath. And basically, our oath is to support the Constitution. That's the main thing. And I look at that and I think, well, golly, does the Constitution provide for its amendment? And I go, yeah, it does. I say, well, I support the Constitution and its amendment to something so tiny that you could, as they say,
like maybe just stop and make it say just Congress shall make no law and then just end there.
Something like that, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
So I figure I support the Constitution as written. And
it's just not done yet.
Which it's just not done. And, you know, I it's not perfect, but it gets me by, and I'm okay with it. If you have the right to, have a change in the law, and I'd like to see it change big time.
Yeah. Yeah, I used to go, my wife and I used to go shooting in Southern California out at Angeles National Forest, which is a really awesome outdoor range, but it cost money. It was a really far drive, and I kind of didn't like shooting next to cops and other gang members. Basically, that's who hangs out. Well, that's not all that hangs out there, but there are a lot of gangbangers and a lot of cops. LA is one of those places where gang members actually practice shooting. They don't most places. Most places they think if you have a gun, you can fire it correctly, and they hold it sideways and things like that, because that's what people do in movies. But yeah, there are some scary cops and gang members in California shooting at the range next to us. When we shoot at the range here, here's a kind of funny story. When we shoot at the range here, the range is like public land out, you know, 20 miles outside of town, and it's free. And like I said, there's no licensure, no paper to sign. Usually the only other people out there are other people shooting, and it's vast. There are like, it's like six ranges outdoors that don't cost anything to go to. You just go and find an empty space and shoot up against the mountain as the backdrop against the hill. And here's the really funny thing. This is, you know, I like some hip-hop music. I like some hip-hop, the hippin' and the hoppin'. And Neem and I have made some hip-hop music together for the movie Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. But being a white boy from L.A., I do kind of associate hip-hop music with, like, here comes trouble. Like, you know, car lowrider going by, like, scoping around, you know, like the movies. And just, like, in L.A., like, everyone's, you know, everyone in L.A. is kind of violent in my mind. Which is why I moved to a state where I can conceal carry without a permit, or even open carry if I want without a permit. And a state with not a lot of crime. And I still have this thing, like, I don't hear hip hop very much. My wife and I are in our, you know, I'm 50. We're in our 50s, early 50s, and like, we're the youngest people on this block. We live in an old people neighborhood, and I'm not really loud. The neighbors, they kind of think we're this interesting, weird couple who moved from LA, but they don't know much about us. We're polite with them, but we don't get in extended conversations with them. I am on the radio in this town. They might put two and two together and figure out that's my voice. But so I don't hear a lot of hip hop. So when I hear hip hop music driving by, I kind of like it, I perks up my ears. I'm like, ugh, like flashbacks of LA. And I was out at the gun range by myself one time, and I was like loading guns out of the car, like didn't have a gun on me yet. And all of a sudden I heard hip hop like kind of far away. And I was like, it just had this reaction to me like, oh no, I better make sure I have a gun on me. There's hip hop, you know? And then I realized it was my music I'd made with Nima playing on my iPod on the headphones. I'd accidentally pressed play on it when I was loading the guns out. So I scared myself with my own hip hop. I basically was like, there goes the neighborhood out in the middle of nowhere because I hear hip hop. Then I realized it was like me playing bass and guitar. So that was kind of funny.
So you got to experience what it was like
to be an old person.
Move into the neighborhood.
Yes. Yeah. I don't blast music though at all. I'm a big fan of headphones in general. And our house is like, we live pretty close to our neighbors. I mean, you know, they could hit me with a stone, any of them on all four sides, but, they're really peaceful. They're really mellow and, they're really old. And our house is brick with triple ply windows. So like the very few times I've actually blasted music at night here, the first time I did it, when I was recording hip hop with Nima and we were playing guitar really loud in the basement, I actually did a test. I had him go out and stand in the front yard when I was playing music in the basement as loud, like rock and roll volumes. And he was like, I can barely hear it in your yard and I cannot hear it at the sidewalk. And I'm like, excellent. And then I had him go downstairs and rap and scream as loud as he could. And I went outside and stood and I could barely hear it in the yard and I could not hear it at the property line. So I was like,
basements suck up a lot of amplified music.
Yeah. You know, here's a little bit of tip. A lot of people don't know the difference between soundproofing and sound conditioning. And I did not have to soundproof our house at all. It's very soundproof, but I had to sound condition it. Now, sound conditioning is really easy to do. You just hang up blankets. They soak up sound in the room, but they certainly don't keep much sound from getting out of the room or outside sound from getting in the room. To do that, you basically need concrete or brick. A good example is an underground cave would be totally soundproofed, but not at all sound conditioned. Like it would be really echoey in there, but you know, you probably wouldn't hear a bomb going off up on the surface. Now, on the other hand, being in a tent when you're camping, the inside of a tent is totally sound conditioned, but it's not at all soundproofed. Like there's no reverb in there. It sounds very dead, but you're going to hear the birds chirping outside and the birds are going to hear you talking. So that's the difference. So Christian libertarianism, tell me about it, Randy. Were you going to move all the way to Christian anarchism since it's late at night?
Well, Christian anarchism, you know, it's not really the same thing as Christian libertarianism. I think we talked a little bit earlier about
Tolstoy.
You know, Tolstoy is kind of the godfather of Christian anarchism. And when you brought that up, I think I mentioned that I haven't really read his greatest works, I mean, War and Peace and Anna Karenina, but I have read his Christian anarchist book, The Kingdom of God is Within You. And by the time he wrote that, I mean, he lived almost entirely in the 19th century. I think he died in 1910. And he heavily influenced, you know, Mahatma Gandhi and his nonviolent, you know, action, and Martin Luther King. And I don't know if anybody's ever heard of a Christian anarchist named Ammon Hennessy, but there were a number of people that he was a very heavy influence on. And Tolstoy, one really quote I really like from him is he said that people generally suppose that governments strengthen their armed forces only to defend the state from other states, oblivious to the fact that armies are necessary before all things for the defense of the government against their own oppressed and enslaved subjects. That's from The Kingdom of God is Within You, which is an ebook you can get on from Google in all kinds of formats. It's free out there. Anybody wants to look at it. Some real good stuff in it. Some of the people that he took his cue from really were Americans more than anyone else. American Quakers, the abolitionists, everyone's heard of William Lloyd Garrison. Well, Garrison was a very big, you know, Christian pacifist, really very anti-government, and Tolstoy took a lot of his thinking from Garrison.
Historically, a lot of the anti-war movements in America and the anti-slavery movements in America were spearheaded by different Christian groups. And I really would like to see the push to absolute abolition of abolition from the state for everybody coming from the Christians. And I'm really glad that you're involved in that, Randy.
Well, you know, and of course, Garrison, of course, was anti-slavery and anti-state. So, he had it. He had it all together there. Yeah, Tolstoy.
The whole package.
Tolstoy was a lieutenant in the Crimean War in the Russian Army and Artillery Regiment, and that's where he got a lot of his aversion to war. He was a Russian Orthodox Christian, although his anarcho-pacifist Christianity eventually got him kicked out of the Orthodox Church near the end of his life. But I don't think he even cared back then. But he basically, you know, relied on, like, I don't know, Matthew, where Jesus said, you've heard them say an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, you know. And Jesus said, but I say to you, don't resist an evildoer, but if anyone strikes you on the right cheek, turn the other also. And you see, he wasn't just anti-state. He was a real pacifist. And that's not the same as a libertarian, you know.
Yeah, libertarians usually carry guns, and they're like porcupines. They, if you don't mess with them, they're peaceful, but they will practice self-defense in most situations. Most of the ones I know, at least.
Totally non-aggression, but it's non-initiation of force. But most libertarians say, yeah, you can defend yourself. Tolstoy said absolutely not. He was a total pacifist. Now, I'm cool with pacifists, okay? If I had a pacifist living next door, I know he's not going to bother me, at least if he's a real pacifist.
Although a lot of them are confused, and they'll do things like call 911 when kids are building a treehouse or something and get the cops there pointing guns at the kids, like happened recently.
But a real pacifist will not use an agent as to do their violence for
you.
You
know, so many people don't understand that these days. They don't understand. Like, there's so many people I met in California. That's a good example. A lot of people who would never do anything forceful to their neighbors, but they'll support governments doing it all day long until the yaks come home. We'll be back with more on Michael Dean After Dark after this trip to the free market.
You are destined to be listening to this show, Michael Dean After Dark, on this very night. Thank you for arriving.
Creamy Radio Audio. Want caviar sound on a cat food budget? Creamy Radio Audio by the Freedom Fiends has great free tips so you can sound like a pro without spending like one. The most powerful form of human communication is one person speaking to another. But if people have to suffer through your sound, they'll change the channel and miss your message. With articles on microphones, preamps, recorders, mastering, recording remotely over the internet, doing a podcast, even getting a show on actual radio, the Freedom Fiends show you what they use and where to get it. Whether you're a talk show host, voiceover artist, podcaster, evangelist, or just want to record your loved ones for the ages, at Creamy Radio Audio, the Freedom Fiends will help you make the most of your sound. Creamy Radio Audio will help you speak to the world with sound that will make people want to keep listening. Check out creamyradioaudio.com. That's creamyradioaudio.com.
Welcome back to Freedom Yak with Michael Dean and Randy England on Michael Dean After Dark. Hold your kitties tight. It's Michael Dean After Dark. Hold them tight, but not too tight. They'll squirm away. They'll let you know if they don't like it. So, Randy England, are you there?
I am here.
Are you English?
A little bit.
A little bit? Just the name?
Well, yeah, because that side of my family has been in the country so long that I don't know where they're from.
You asked me about my middle name. On my email, it says Michael Werecat Dean. That is not my real given middle name. A werecat is like a werewolf, but you turn into a cat instead of a wolf. It's based on that horrible movie, well, that funny movie from the 70s that David Bowie did the soundtrack to with Natasha Kinski called Cat People, which is a remake of a really weird movie from the 50s called Cat People about some Croatian lady that turns into cats. But my middle name is Wareham, Wareham. And it's very English because that's actually a town in England.
Yeah, that'll get you beaten up.
Yeah. Although now that I'm beyond the age of getting beaten up for my name, I guess I'm old enough to just go, yeah, I don't need to have that name anymore. So I just, you know, and to me, like, it's as easy to change your name in this day and age as just changing your email signature. So I am Michael Werecat Dean talking to Randy England. And I'm a little bit English, but I am more Irish. I'm English and Irish, so I'm at war with my own brain, I guess. The Catholic and the Protestant sides of me are at war with each other. Well, I am. The English side is Protestant. My family is Protestant, and there is some Irish in the woodpile there, so that's probably the Catholics. So, yeah, man. So tell me more about Christian anarchy and why the Tolstoy variety was not true libertarian anarchism, but more of the communist variety of what they.
Well, yeah, you know, the word anarchist though is as slippery, you know, when libertarians use it as it is when, you know, Christian anarchists use it. I mean, it can mean, you know, there's plenty of people I've seen that use the name Christian anarchism when they mean, you know, Christian libertarian. In other words, you know, get rid of the state. But of course, the movement, you know, Christian anarchism. If you want to go, you know, look it up on Wikipedia or something, you know, you'll find that the biggest thrust of it is the Tolstoy brand of it, where it's the pacifism is a big part of it. Another person that I really admire quite a bit from my, you know, religious standpoint is Dorothy Day, who her Catholic worker movement started in the early, I mean, before the middle of the 20th century, and they were chiefly Christian anarchists. I mean, she used to make fun of what she called the Holy Mother of the State, and she hated the state for most things. She said if somebody came to you and was in trouble, you know, don't you dare send them to the state. You know, you help them yourself. I mean, that was, you know, her attitude. And I have a lot of respect for that, but they were basically pacifist anarchists. Although many of the pacifists, though, if you scratch a little bit in, you find that they're not really pacifists. Because I even think that Dorothy Day, I think I read one time that she had some guy, you know, went nuts and went and grabbed one of her friends, you know, went for his throat or something like that, and she and another guy came over and pulled the attacker off, you know, by his arms, and you know, she was fine with using that force. She'd say, no, I wouldn't. If I had a gun, I wouldn't shoot him. So you know, I guess I have some respect for that. But I mean, I'm not a pacifist myself, but I do understand it. I mean, it's someone who's taking seriously, you know, the thing, turn the other cheek. I mean, that's what it is. And turning my own cheek, I don't know. I guess if I don't turn my cheek when someone, you know, does wrong to me, you know, maybe that's my own pride or something. I have a little trouble, though, with the idea of, say, turning my family's cheek if someone was breaking into my house.
Yeah.
I couldn't do that.
I mean, I can't
be a pacifist.
I think that a literal pacifism, a literal interpretation of turn the other cheek in every situation, I could definitely see the don't dwell in anger, don't hold resentments, but in an immediate situation where it takes some kind of force to prevent some kind of physical aggression, I really think that a trend of people doing that universally leads to everybody dead. I mean, it literally takes you out of the gene pool and takes your family out of the gene pool. You know, I have a message for conservatives who like George Bush, but I'll have it when we're back. And I know he's out of the picture, but I know there's a lot of people pining for him. And I don't like him. I don't like Obama either. And I'll tell you why when we get back on Michael Dean After Dark.
You're listening to Michael Dean After Dark, and yes, we're broadcasting this message into space.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the Fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. but they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com. I've heard it said that to a young boy, his vision of God is very much like the face of his mother. To me, my vision of God is very much what I see when I look in the eyes of cats and of good people. We're talking, we're yakking. This is a yak farm. This is Michael Dean's libertarian radio school where I farm the next generation of yakkers on my yak farm. And Randy was saying during the show, I was saying that... he was saying that in a year and a half, he'll probably still be a newbie. And I said, no, man, in a year and a half, I hope you go off and start your own show. Not to say I'm going to kick you out in a year and a half, but I hope you're so good at it that you want to be the helmsman and have your own cadre of rotating guests on a spit, your own stable of yaks. And we came up with the idea, the joking idea of that it'll be like Amway. It'll be a pyramid scheme. And everybody can tithe up 10% to me, but no, I'm not going to charge anybody. If anybody wants to make donations to this show or to, if anyone makes donations, I'm sticking them in my pocket. I'm not splitting them with all these guests. I do all the work. They just show up and yak. You okay with that, Randy?
Wait a minute. We didn't talk about this.
Okay. We're talking about it now.
I was thinking of the pyramid scheme where, you know, I had to
send a portion
of the loot up.
This show's losing money. So, You can join in the losing of money too if you want to make some later. But no, man, I don't know. This is not a commercial venture. My show Freedom Fiends is a commercial venture, and we make probably about $300 a month, and spend about $200 of that on expenses, and put a little bit on our pocket, and then buy microphones for people that don't have them. But we're done doing that. We've done our charity work for buying the world microphones.
You need a way to shift your losses to the public sector.
No, man, I'm not George Bush, and I'm not Barack Obama. So I was talking before about George Bush's faith-based initiatives, and this is something that he decreed when he was emperor of America, that the government should give money to faiths, to churches, which is basically a violation of the First Amendment, that Congress shall make no law. You know, the separation of church and state idea, Congress shall make no law. About religion, but you said it's not a law, so maybe Congress can make suggestions and demand things like kings, but they can't.
I think it would be a law if they decided to do it.
Yeah, well, they did it, and a lot of conservatives praised it, and a lot of those same conservatives hate Obama. And here's the thing: Obama is using the faith-based initiatives also, and he's using them, basically the same way that Bush did to infiltrate the government into churches, but he's going a little further with it. He goes a little further than Bush did in a lot of things. You know, basically, like, all the liberals hated the Bush Doctrine. Obama is the Bush Doctrine. If you look up what the Bush Doctrine was, Obama is ramping up the Bush Doctrine, and Obama is ramping up the fascist takeover of not just the monetary system, but of the churches by sending things out to churches through the faith-based initiative, saying, talk to your flock about why they need to be on Obamacare, and talk to your flock about why the Christian thing to do is to raise taxes, literally. So what you got to remember about supporting government is just because you like the guy who's in office now doesn't mean the next guy is going to support what you believe. And it's a loser-take-all system. When you back the government, when you back politicians, you are strengthening the system that will be used against you by the next guy. So really the only thing is to not support it. And I'm not saying not pay taxes. I pay taxes begrudgingly. I'm saying don't support it. Don't be supportive of it. Talk to people about why they shouldn't support coercion and theft and fraud and aggression and breaking all 10 commandments like all governments do all day long. So, Randy, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, paying your taxes at gunpoint is hardly support.
It's a mugging.
They would be mistaken to mistake that for support. No, I agree with you completely. You know, Christians... And Catholics, as the group that I, you know, have clued into the things that they've been doing. It seems like they always love using the government power when the government is whipping on somebody that they don't like. But now, but then it's, you know, it turns around and now the whip is in the other hand. I mean, with the, you know, the Catholic Church right now, you know, there's these lawsuits. Well, it's not just Catholics. So there's Christian groups too, where Obama is ordering, you know, the Obamacare is having them to do things and provide things that they, you know, say are against the moral teachings of their church. And now they're getting whipped, but they weren't complaining when the government was, you know, putting their moral, you know, beliefs into law, and now the shoe's on the other foot, and we're taking it in the chin.
Yeah, and that's what I mean by it's a lose-lose, you know, zero-sum game. Basically, politics, I've heard people, you know, I've heard people complain about the temperature of the discussion of politics in this country is out of control. And it's like that basically means the left and the right are screaming at each other even louder all day long. And it's like, of course they're going to. They're diametrically opposed on a lot of things. But it really is a system set up to divide and conquer. And it's the state wanting to divide the people and conquer them and turn them all into slaves, basically, figuratively and literally. I mean, really, it's a continuum, you know, from a free person to a slave in shackles being whipped in a field. It is a continuum. And life as an American taxpayer in the government is somewhere on that continuum and heading more toward the slave part. So if you're in favor of doing things through the government, you should know that things are going to be done to you through the government that you just disagree with to the core of your soul. And that's the deal with the devil that backing politicians and voting and backing politics is. And if you want real freedom, you got to step out of that system, at least mentally. You have to at least just say, I don't support that at all, and it's stupid. There's a lot of value to saying it's stupid. I mean, even if you sound like Beavis and Butthead, oh, that's stupid. Hey, man, Beavis and Butthead are wise sages in some ways. They know what kind of music does not rock. So Murray Rothbard was a big influence on you. Tell us a little bit about Murray Rothbard.
Well, I've, you know, I read a lot of Murray's books. Never met the man, but For a New Liberty was a real important book that sets out so much of libertarianism, and also a little later book I believe was the Ethics of Liberty. And you know, we were talking a bit earlier about not everything in what he writes. I mean, I don't agree with everything, even though I have just enormous respect for his thought and his thinking through, you know, all of the ins and outs of libertarianism and a lot of other subjects too. I mean, he a lot of economics and that, which I know almost nothing about. I mean, I can say words like supply and demand or something, you know, but that's about it. I'm not very good, but there are some things that are you know, in a way controversial that he's had, like one kind of interesting thing, like he doesn't believe that bribery is a crime. And, you know, I'm thinking of that, and I guess I'm looking at that from a, you know, maybe from an ex-prosecutor standpoint.
Well, I mean, think about all governments legally bribe everything all the time. You know, I mean, when you think about, I mean, what did the United States do in Iraq? They bombed a bunch of people, they killed a bunch of people, and then there were a bunch of unidentified combatants running around, and they basically paid a lot of them to stop fighting.
Well, no, if you bribe a government official, I'm not sure if I have any problem with that at all. Okay, I mean, it's a crime, you go to jail, but morally, who knows, it could be a good thing. But I'm talking about, say, you know, we're in a free society already, and you use bribery simply to make, say, the guard at the bank your accomplice in a robbery. I think your bribery, you know, you and the cop are bank robbers, you know.
Of course.
And so, you know, I have a little problem with some things like that. And one thing, failure to repay debts. As I read it, and I could be wrong on some of these too, because I haven't read everything he's written, but I gathered from some things I've read that if you don't pay a debt, that could be considered a crime, like stealing. Like not paying a debt is stealing. And, you know, maybe my background is such that, you know, you have to intend to steal something for it to be an actual theft. So I'm not sure that failure to pay a debt should be stealing. Now, what happens to you is sort of a similar thing in a free society, because a thief is, first and foremost, is going to have to reimburse for all the loss that they cause. And I suppose a debtor is going to have to pay back, you know, what they owe. So they're very similar in that way, but they might be treated differently, and maybe debt wouldn't be treated as a crime. Perhaps lower standard of proof or something, you know, beyond a reasonable doubt versus preponderance of the evidence or something like that. So I'm not sure that you would treat a debt the same way you would treat a theft. And, you know, I don't know. Some other things I think that he, I think that he teaches that fractional reserve banking is always immoral, always wrong, and can't be allowed. And I may not know enough about banking, but I'm thinking, okay, if I put my money in the bank and the bank says, oh, by the way, we're going to loan your money out so you like can't get it back all at once. And I go, okay, I'm thinking, what's wrong with that? So I don't know. And that may be my ignorance talking, because I don't know anything about banking.
I don't know that that's actually fraud or aggression if it's stated that that's how it works. It's kind of hidden a lot from a lot
that's
of
what I, that's what I that's what I wonder, like
people know it.
I think
a lot of loan sharks probably work the same way, and you know, loan sharks are probably more libertarian than banks, because at least they tell you what they're going to do up front if you don't pay.
Yeah. Now another thing that he has that I'm not sure about his views on copyright. I not so much that I think that he supports them, but there, maybe he has too optimistic a view of what kind of contractual or common law copyright that you could have. I'm not sure you could have a copyright
intellectual property.
It's a whole different subject. One other thing too that I have a little question about is on land use, like titles to land. I mean, I get the impression from reading Rothbard that, like, if you come in and you buy a piece of land, or you come in and homestead the land and you make it your own, and you know, now it's your land, I'm thinking that you could lose the land. And that may be my legal background, because you know, now we have a thing called adverse possession. And that is, if you don't do anything with your land and somebody comes in and uses it, you know, for say 10 years, just comes in and just runs in and makes it their own, the titles clean it up at the end of the 10 years, and it's their land.
Yeah,
squatters. So it's kind of like use it or lose it.
I don't agree with squatters' rights, which is basically similar to that. We'll be back with the final segment on Michael Dean After Dark with Randy England after this.
You're listening to Michael Dean After Dark, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum. You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get state speech is hate speech, guns and weed, buy sheep for sheep on sheep, and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists. It's only $10 for 10 buttons, including shipping. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
This is Freedom Yak on Michael Dean After Dark with Michael Dean and Randy England. And this is the Libertarian Yak Farm, where I build and train and nurture the yakkers of tomorrow. So, Randy, yak.
Oh, I was yak. You know, in the break, I was, you know, yakking about, or before the break, we were yakking about Murray Rothbard, and I had some things I disagreed with. And I'm sitting here thinking, you know, this is a libertarian show, and I'm here saying things like, well, here's another thing I don't like about your grandmother. I really respect the fellow, and the fact that I only have a short list of things that I don't like. But one, I think that is kind of important.
You know what? Here's what I think. Let me say real quick. I think libertarianism is not done yet. And he made great inroads, but I think it's not done yet. And I think it needs something like the Freedom Fiends to come along and add the Beavis and Butthead component. And then hopefully someone will come along and knock me out. Maybe that kid Nick. I hope so.
Okay. Well, you know, and I'm not saying I'm the guy or anything, because I'm surely not. But one thing with child neglect
I'm is the guy. That I'm the guy.
Okay, there you go. You can be the guy. But Rothbard, if you believe that if you brought your baby home from the hospital, that you could bring it in and you could take it and you could set it down, you know, in the crib in the back room. And of course, he said, how many people would do such a thing and not feed it and not clothe it, not change his diaper and just let it die? And that there would be nothing that anyone else could do, because that would be aggression against those persons who were neglecting their child. And that horrifies most people, the idea that that would be allowed. But in his system, he didn't have a way to say that's wrong. And, you know, thinking about it, it seems to me that there is a way to say that is wrong and that's aggression. But it's kind of a legal theory that you know, doesn't come in that much. But it's the idea that you do not have a responsibility, you know, positive responsibility to help other people. You know, if you see somebody's about to be hit by a car, you can just stand there and watch and let them be hit by the car. Or if somebody's about to fall in a hole, you don't have to try and save them. You don't have to warn them. You don't have to do anything unless you were the one that put the hole there, or you're the one driving the car, or you're the one that conceived and bore the child. In other words, you have put this person in this position where they will be hurt or they will die unless you act. And I believe that makes you an aggressor if you don't do something to mitigate the harm. And that's just kind of a theoretical thing, but it does solve the problem and explain why a parent does have to feed its infant child, because if they don't, it will die, and they're the one that put the child in that situation. Does it make sense? I don't know. But it seems to me that I cannot possibly accept the view that child neglect is not, shall we say, interferable by people who might be able to save the baby.
Oh, I agree. I would, yeah. And I don't know how that would work in a stateless society. I think churches would take over a lot of it, and I think relatives would take over a lot of it.
It's not going to happen. This isn't going to happen much. It's a theoretical.
Here's the thing. This is why I am not a fanboy of Murray Rothbard. I like him a lot. I respect him. And he made some great inroads. I think people have been standing on the shoulders of that giant, though, and going further. And I think a lot of them are on LRN.FM, which carries us. So I think that, I don't know, I said it last time, like I was never the kind to argue how many angels could dance on the head of a pin. And I think that a lot of the libertarian people who sit around and think, well, and write these grand essays on what would you do if blah, blah, blah. I guess that has to be done, but I've never had much interest in it. And I've never had much interest, you know, and I think that the haters would say that I'm not interested in solutions, but I'm just not the central planner for the society that has no central planning.
Well, that job isn't for everybody. Everybody does their bit.
Yep. Thanks, Randy. It's been a good show, man.
Thank you, Michael.
Take having you on, and looking forward to having you back. This has been Michael Dean After Dark. And here, let Michael Dean tell you about how it's been Michael Dean After Dark. Take it, Michael. Take it, Michael. Take it.
This has been Michael Dean After Dark. I hope we've helped calm the hamster in your brain and left you in a better place than where we found you. We'll be here 5 nights a week, same time and channel.
In the meantime, go to michaelwdean.com for more. That's michaelwdean.com. Thank you and have a wonderful evening. Good night.